May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. Kevin Girk on behalf of the appellants, Frank and Joanne Mandarano. This is an appeal from a Superior Court summary judgment decision related to a claim for damage related to a fire. I have asked to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. The basic facts in this case are undisputed. The Mandaranos, my clients, owned a commercial building in Smyrna. They needed insurance to protect them as landlords and business owners, and they purchased a business owner special policy from Harleysville Insurance. It provided property coverage and general commercial liability coverage. Tracy Crisco was one of their tenants. He operated a motorcycle business from one of the stores in the building that the Mandaranos owned. On February 17, 2003, a fire destroyed the building and the content of Mr. Crisco's store. The cause of the fire was never determined. Crisco filed a lawsuit against the Mandaranos. In his complaint, he alleged that his property, was destroyed by fire due to a malfunction in the heating and or electrical systems. He also alleged in his complaint that the Mandaranos breached a lease by failing to repair the heating and electrical systems in the store, a duty that they allegedly assumed in the lease. The Mandaranos turned the claim over to Harleysville. Harleysville denied coverage and refused to defend the action. Harleysville claimed that the policy did not cover actions sounding in breach of lease or breach of contract. So therefore, the Mandaranos retained their own counsel and defended and litigated the case against Mr. Crisco. The Mandaranos won the case against Mr. Crisco. They prevailed on a summary judgment motion. The trial court below found specifically that the plaintiff, Mr. Crisco, failed to put in any evidence showing that the Mandaranos committed any negligent act or omission that caused the fire. The Mandaranos also sued Harleysville for breach of contract for failing to meet their coverage obligations in the policy. Both the Mandaranos and Harleysville filed motions for summary judgment in the trial court below. The issue there was whether the fire damage was a covered occurrence under the policy and or whether the policy provided for coverage for assumed contractual liability under the lease. It's the Mandaranos' position that the trial court's decision should be reversed because the policy provides for coverage for the fire damage alleged in Mr. Crisco's complaint under two separate provisions of the policy. Liability for an occurrence that causes property damage in the principal coverage of the policy, and also assumed contractual liability contained in the supplemental coverage of the policy. I'll first address the issue of an occurrence. Harleysville should have defended the lawsuit because the policy covers claims for property damage caused by an occurrence. An occurrence is specifically defined in the policy as an accident. The case bore down to its core, the issue is whether the fire here was an accident. The dispute between Harleysville and the Mandaranos on coverage centers on what actually caused the damage to Crisco's property contained in the complaint. Did the fire damage Mr. Crisco's property, which is the Mandaranos' position, or did a breach of lease damage Mr. Crisco's property, which is Harleysville's position? It's clear in the complaint that Mr. Crisco was alleging that the fire caused damage to his property. The fire was an accident. No one knows what the cause of the fire was. The state fire marshal investigated the fire and was unable to determine the cause or the origin.
What is the role of the statute of limitations on these issues? I mean, the fact that a contract claim is what was brought as opposed to a tort claim. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that was because of the statute of limitations, essentially?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Crisco waited too long to file a negligence claim based on or seeking damage for property under, I believe it's 8107. So therefore, he brought only a claim sounding in breach of contract. I think the role that it plays in this case, it explains why Mr. Crisco didn't bring a negligence claim or some other tort-based claim. However, that is an issue that doesn't dictate coverage. That's the Banderano's position, that it would just offer an explanation on why this played out the way that it did.
And does everyone agree that if it had been a negligence or a tort claim, there would be coverage?
I believe that is the case, Your Honor, although I can't say that that has been addressed directly by Harleysville, but I believe that would be their position.
Well, the trial court, seemed to give dispositive weight to how the claim was cast.
Yes, Your Honor.
Nobody disputes that had the claim been brought as a negligence claim, putting aside limitations problems, that there would have been coverage and a defense. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
But the same facts repackaged as a contract claim, persuaded the court that there was no coverage and no obligation to defend.
Yes, Your Honor.
If that was error, then what would be the rule of law that we would have to adopt in order to rule your way?
Well, there are two separate coverages that are at issue here. For the issue related to whether it's a covered occurrence, the rule of law would be that the factual allegations of what caused the loss, the damage that's being alleged in the complaint, would be the focus of the inquiry determining coverage. And as it relates to the coverage for assumed contractual liability in a lease, I think the rule of law would simply be that the styling of the complaint is not the determining factor.
Well, you look beyond the label and see, whether the complaint alleges that fire caused the damage.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what about under the assumed contract liability provision?
As that relates to, or relating that to the trial court's decision, I think the rule of law would be that you look to the plain language of the policy, and not rewrite the policy or insert requirements from one section into another section.
Well, how would you, if that's the rule, then how would you apply it here?
Well, the trial court determined that the reason there wasn't coverage for assumed contractual liability is it found that covers only tort claims or claims for tort liability. Here, there are two different sections that are.
It did ascribe some meaning to the term assumed contract liability. I thought that the court said, well, yes, there is coverage for that, but it only applies where we're talking about sort of indemnity agreement.
Yes, Your Honor. The trial court looked at the language assumed contractual liability and gave a blanket finding that those type of claims or that type of coverage only relates to hold harmless or indemnification agreements.
Okay, and if that is incorrect, then what is the correct interpretation of the language of the policy, and how do you apply it here?
Turning to the issue, to that issue, Your Honor, in my appendix on A37 is the supplemental coverage related to assumed contractual liability. That coverage simply states we cover bodily injury or property damage liability which is assumed under the following contracts or agreements. A, lease of premises. That's all that it says. It's very broad, and it's general. The way that should be interpreted is that
that if the lease agreement requires that the premises be maintained properly against fire damage, that that's an the liability assumed by contract?
Yes, it's an obligation assumed in a contract that could ultimately lead to liability if it's not fulfilled.
So that's not limited to fire damage, then? And in your view, it's not limited to fire damage?
Correct, Your Honor.
So what is the scope of it? Anything under the contract?
I think the way that this policy is written, that obligations, responsibilities assumed in a lease, that this language is broad enough to include a breach of that lease.
So any breach of the lease, there would be insurance for it, of whatever nature?
Including theft, if they don't, if the landlord doesn't provide sufficient security for the premises?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's a fire policy.
It's a very broad policy, and it includes coverage for many different issues that may arise with a business owner, a landlord that is operating a business and has tenants that are operating a business and have patrons that are coming to the location.
Well, I may be missing something here, but how does a breach of a lease constitute an occurrence under the definition of an occurrence in the policy?
A breach of the lease is not an occurrence. When analyzing the issue of coverage related to an occurrence, the accident, the fire itself is the occurrence.
So what you seem to be saying is that you can pick and choose, and you can say, I'm talking about a breach of a lease, and the insurance policy covers anything that happens that is a breach of the lease, but I agree that a breach of the lease is not an occurrence, so now we have to look at what happened that caused the breach of the lease and see whether that's an occurrence. Aren't you taking different parts of this policy that suit you and not being consistent here?
I hope not, Your Honor. I don't think that these separate provisions are mutually exclusive. You could have coverage as an occurrence that causes property damage and also have coverage under assumed contractual liability, or coverage for one and not the other. I don't think the fact...
Just so that I understand you, you're saying that coverage for breach of the lease does not have to be for an occurrence.
Correct, Your Honor. And that is...
Because the contract assumption provision is a supplemental liability creating provision, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Or supplemental coverage provision.
Yes, and many of the cases that are cited in the briefs, in the Harleysville brief, relate to a situation where the litigants are arguing that the breach of contract, failing to obtain assurance that you agreed to obtain for an employee or a subcontractor, is not an occurrence. We don't disagree with that. The difference is there's an intervening cause of the personal injury or the property damage. Here it's a fire. But in a situation where there's a failure to obtain insurance that you agreed to obtain for another party, there's no accident. There's no accident, no intervening cause that caused the property damage.
Is there a principal case that you rely upon for liability, for coverage for breach of a lease under these circumstances? Is there a particular authority, or are we just sort of sui generis with this particular policy? Is there any case law on point?
There isn't any case law on point that addresses my issue specifically under the terms of a policy similar to this, analyzing at least a very short and general coverage provision just says lease of premises. I found some language similar to this in cases, but the issues really aren't directly on point. So I don't want to say this is an issue of first impression, but I didn't find any Delaware case law directly on point. Therefore, I didn't have a lot to cite.
Thank you.
Now, how are you? How do you distinguish office structures?
Office structures. Office structures is a situation where the issue was whether, first, it's not a claim. The claim in that case did not relate to a personal injury or property damage caused by an occurrence. It did have some occurrence. It had that occurrence language, and it seemed that the plaintiff was trying to fit a breach of contract for failing to obtain insurance into an occurrence policy, and it didn't work. And I think that's the right decision, and I don't think the decision in this case affects the office structure case. But in that case, there was a specific there was no indemnification for the contractor's own negligence, and that was an issue in the case because the claim that they were seeking coverage for related to a claim for the general contractor's negligence, and that seemed to be a determining factor in that case. It's not present in this case. It also analyzed hold harmless and indemnification agreements similar to the language in the policy under Section 1F, under contractual liability, for any other contract. There's general consensus in this country that language for any other contract in these type of policies relate to hold harmless agreements or indemnification agreements. But that's not the situation here because we're relying on a completely different section of that policy that simply says lease of premises.
You're into your rebuttal time. If you'd like to save it, you can, or you can continue.
I will save it, Your Honor. Thank you.
May it please the Court, good afternoon, Your Honors. Joshua Meyerhoff on behalf of defendant below, appellee Harleysville Mutual Insurance Company. Your Honor, this case presents a very simple issue. Does a claim for a breach of contract require Harleysville to provide any coverage? As this Court has said on numerous occasions, the insurer's duty to defend is based on comparing the allegations to the coverages in the insurance policy. It's what is alleged as far as the claims that are covered. And in this case, there's undisputed that the only claim alleged is a breach of contract claim. Simply put, there's no...
Well, that's the label, but, moving beyond that, the allegation is that a fire caused damage to the property of the tenant and the landlord. There was insurance against that risk, was there not?
Well, Your Honor, to answer that question, the answer is there's insurance coverage for claims of accidents, and to the extent that the fire was an accident and there had been a negligence claim, there's no dispute that there would have been coverage.
All right.
But the analysis in this case is whether a claim for breach of contract would entitle coverage. And let me explain that. What I'm trying to say is the complaint talks about a duty under the lease to maintain this heater. The complaint then alleges that the Mandarinas failed to maintain that heater. A fire ensued, causing damages. The fire in this case would be the measure of damages under that breach of the lease agreement. So to the extent that the fire caused X number of dollars damages, that's how you'd measure the contractual breach of damages had there been a breach of contract found, which there wasn't.
Yeah, but is that the only relevance of the fire?
In this case, it would be, for purposes of this complaint, Your Honor, the answer to that is yes. It's background
Why?
Information.
Why? The that reason is, what is there in the law of contracts or insurance that requires... that reading, that what I would, what some would say is a crabbed reading.
Well, I would direct this court to its decision in the Continental Casualty case. In that case, an employee alleged certain claims regarding breach of contract, breach of due process, breach of First Amendment, and in that case, the policy provided coverage for defamation. And this court said, giving that complaint a fair reading, even in those cases, the claims asserted do not provide coverage because there's no claim for defamation. And that's the same thing here, Your Honor. Even though, to the extent that a negligence claim had been alleged, there would be coverage, there was no claim of negligence in this case, again, as Justice Risley pointed out, because the statute of limitations had run. Therefore, the only claim asserted is a breach of contract, and the analysis is, does the insurance policy provide coverage for a breach of contract? And the Mandarinos have failed to show any specific provision that does so. And the reason for that is there is no provision that does so. To the extent that they're arguing the assumed contractual liability provision provides coverage, we would submit, as this Court found in Office Structures, that assumed contractual liability refers to hold harmless and indemnification agreements.
Notwithstanding the fact that in this contract it specifically refers to leases, leases are not hold harmless provisions.
Well, the insurance policy provides coverage for assumed contractual liability in the following agreements. Lease of premises is one. So to the extent that in the lease of premises, in this case, they had assumed contractual liability, there's no dispute that there would be coverage. But there is no assumed contractual liability. This Court and other courts across the nation have held that that provision, assumed contractual liability, refers to hold harmless and indemnification agreements. In essence, you would need a separate contract between the Mandarinos and a third party. They would have to assume that obligation, in other words, take that on, and they haven't done that in this case.
Well, to follow up on Justice Berger's question, doesn't that reading eliminate the breach of lease language in the policy? I mean, doesn't it read it out of the policy?
What language for breach of lease,
that,
Your Honor?
Assumed contract liability or whatever the phrase is restricted to hold harmless agreements and indemnity agreements.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. The policy says we will provide coverage for assumed contractual liability under the following circumstances, and one of them is lease of premises, and there's five others that are included. In this case,
well, give us an example of a case that is an insurable case that would arise involving assumed contract liability arising out of a breach of a lease.
Okay. Let's take this case as an example. Let's assume the heater was manufactured by GE for sake of argument. Let's assume the Mandarinos entered an agreement with GE saying that we agree to repair and maintain your heater. To the extent that we fail to do that and a claim is brought because of that, we will hold you harmless and indemnify you for that loss. Same facts, there's a fire. Crisco then sues the Mandarinos and GE. In that case, Your Honor, Harleysville would owe a duty to defend GE under the hold harmless indemnification agreement because the Mandarinos have assumed contractual liability in that case. They've taken on the obligation of a third party. That's completely absent, Your Honor.
So there would have to be a third party involved.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And in fact, what's interesting in this lease, if you look at paragraph 15, the landlord explicitly states that we have no liability for fire damage and puts the onus on the tenant, in this case Mr. Crisco, to obtain insurance. So to the extent that they're arguing they assume contractual liability, they've done everything the opposite. They've rejected coverage for fire and have explicitly stated we are not assuming any liability for fire. So there's no basis for them to interpret the assumed contractual liability coverage contrary to its plain meaning, which, as this Court has said, is hold harmless and indemnification agreements, to say that they are entitled to coverage under that portion of the policy. That's one thing that is missing as far as one of the things they argue in their brief, is whether they had a reasonable expectation of coverage. To the extent that reasonable expectations in an insurance policy comes in, this Court has said on numerous occasions, the reasonable expectations of the insurer only comes in when there's an ambiguity in the policy. We would respectfully submit that assumed contractual liability doesn't have an ambiguity because the term assumed contractual liability is clear on its face. You need to assume contractual liability, and assuming means taking on the obligation of a third party. But to the extent that this Court may say, well, even if we accept that it may be ambiguous, what are the reasonable expectations? Again, we would just respectfully submit that the lease itself says that the Mandarinos are rejecting any liability for fire. They had no reasonable expectation that the insurance company would provide them coverage. To the extent that the appellant has argued that this is an occurrence, they focus on the fire itself, that the fire was found in the Crisco action to be accidental. Again, Harleysville doesn't dispute that there was no finding of an accident or something to that effect. But again, the focus is what is the claim asserted. In this case, the fire is merely background information. The claim asserted is the Mandarinos had a duty under their lease agreement with Crisco to repair and maintain the heater. They breached that obligation under the lease, and Mr. Crisco was damaged as a result. And there's numerous ways that that lease could have been breached without a fire. A good example is perhaps on February 16, 2003, a day before the fire, Mr. Kriska goes in and sees the heater door off. Again, that would give rise to a breach of contract claim under the lease because he failed, the Mandarinas failed to repair it. So in that case, kind of like this, that would just be background information as to how to measure the damages. The fact that the fire was accidental or non-accidental is simply immaterial to whether coverage is triggered because, again, this Court has said on numerous occasions the duty to defend is triggered by comparing the allegations to the insurance policy. And courts across the country have found that breach of contract is simply not an occurrence. Neither has, and the appellant hasn't pointed to, as they recognize, no, there's no Delaware case on point, but there's also no case that suggests that a breach of contract is an occurrence. The other argument that the appellant has raised in its brief is that the styling of the complaint is immaterial. It's the substance. Harleysville agrees with that contention, Your Honor. It is true that the substance of the complaint is what determines the duty to defend. But in this case, they claim that it's a negligence claim that's merely masked as a breach of contract claim, and we respectfully disagree with that claim. The fact is the statute of limitations ran for a negligence claim. Most likely that's why Mr. Kriska did not allege a negligence claim. What is alleged is a breach of contract claim and only a breach of contract claim. And the duty under a breach of contract is separate than a negligence duty. In this case, the duty arises out of the lease. Under negligence, it would arise presumably out of a statute or some type of common law.
So if the complaint had alleged both, even though a statute of limitations is an affirmative defense, there would have been a duty to defend.
Yes, Your Honor. But the fact remains, the duty to defend is determined by the allegations. So to the extent that any other type of claim had been alleged, again, those allegations would be compared to the policy.
Well, that's what I wanted to test. Let's take Justice Ridgely's hypo. You know, the facts that are before us, which I gather are not in any real dispute, let's assume we're alleged in the complaint, and then there follows two counts, first count being negligence and the second being breach of contract. Clearly, there would be a duty to defend in the first count.
Yes, Your Honor.
But under your analysis, there wouldn't be any duty to defend the second count.
Well, Delaware law makes clear that if one count is triggered by the complaint, then the duty to defend arises for all.
Right.
So to the extent that there would be no duty to indemnify, which is determined later, there would be no duty to indemnify for the breach of contract claim.
But there would be a duty to defend.
Assuming that there was negligence found against the insured, yes, Your Honor. And in this case, what happened because there was no negligence claim for whatever reason, the only claim asserted was a breach of contract claim. And again, comparing the allegations of the complaint to the insurance policy, it's clear that there's no insurance coverage. There's simply nothing in the policy to suggest that breach of contract is covered. Plaintiff's strained reading of the term assumed contractual liability runs counter to its plain reading, to the ruling of this court and office structures, to the ruling of courts across the country, and in all honesty, contrary to their lease agreement, which they said they would not assume any liability for fire.
So if the word assumed was not there, and there would be coverage?
I would submit that the word assumed doesn't necessarily need to be in the lease itself, Your Honor, but there has to be a third-party obligation. The Mandarinas would have had to take, even if it didn't say the word assumed, we agree to hold harmless or indemnify, something to that effect, or we agree to take on this obligation. There needs to be a separate second contract for the assumed contractual liability coverage to be triggered, and that's simply absent in this case, Your Honor. Unless the court has any further questions, that will conclude my argument.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Kevin Girk again, Your Honor, for the appellants. Harleysville is relying on a provision in the contract, the policy that doesn't exist. There's no exclusion for a breach of contract action. There's no language that they point to in this policy that excludes a claim that is styled as a breach of contract action or
okay,
styled as something else.
Let me stop you just to make sure I understand what's going on here. There are two potential policy provisions that could apply. One says you get coverage for an occurrence that causes damage, right?
Correct.
And the fire itself is an occurrence, but then we get to the question of whether this claim is for breach of a lease or for fire damage. So we got one issue having to do with, is this an occurrence, right?
Correct.
And if we find that, or the trial court found that, no, this isn't an occurrence because it's a breach of contract claim, even though the underlying issue has to do with the fire, then the next thing we move to is, okay, there's a provision that says you have coverage for assumed contractual liability, including in leases, right?
Correct.
What's wrong with the analysis presented by opposing counsel and adopted by the trial court that says, well, there is a meaning to the term assumed contractual liability, and what it means is you have to assume liability on behalf of a third party, and that's not what happened here. Why is that not applicable?
Because that's not what the policy says, Your Honor. There is a separate section for assumed contractual liability related to hold harmless and indemnification agreements. It says that any part of any other contract or agreement could be a contractual liability relating to the conduct of your business. It's in Section F.
Where in the appendix are you reading from?
A37, Your Honor, my appendix. Under contractual liability, Section 1F, this is the provision for tort liability for indemnification agreements. There's a requirement that the conduct must be related to your business. That's not required for lease of premises. There's a requirement that you must assume tort liability. That is a requirement that's not present in the lease of premises language. And it also defines tort liability as liability that would be imposed by law in the absence of any contract or agreement. That's a requirement that is not attached to the lease of premises assumed liability. Also, there's no obligation that a third party is involved, that there's a third-party contract. It just says there's coverage for liability which is assumed under the following contracts. It doesn't say anything about a third party.
Thank you.
I just wanted to, you're citing F, but wasn't all the opinion of the Superior Court about A, 1A?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, was 1F argued to the Superior Court?
1F was the part about there's no exclusion, the language relied on by Harleysville was not included in the policy.
Was 1F argued to the Superior Court? I didn't see it cited.
I can't say that 1F was argued to the Superior Court. At the court below, we took the primary position that this was an occurrence, and Harleysville took the primary position that there's coverage for assumed contractual liability related to the lease, and this situation, there's no coverage. So
thank you. Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take this matter under consideration, and we'll adjourn.